Hey, everybody, and welcome to Movie Crush. Live-a-dish, everyone. This has only happened once before, last year with Tony Hale. And this year, I went back to Sketchfest, thanks to Janet Varney inviting me like she does every year. And she lined up a great guest for me, the wonderful and talented Busy Phillips. She asked me, I say this actually on stage too, but she sent me a list of folks and asked for my top three. And I wrote down Busy Phillips three times because I wanted to talk to her because... well, for a lot of reasons. I respect her career. I respect her here 20 years in doing for herself and making her own opportunities as a woman in Hollywood and being a voice for change and for being a mom who is out there living life in a real way on her Instagram page. She's got a huge Insta following because she's just kind of getting real about parenthood and how tough it is and how hard marriage is and talking real about all this stuff, which I really respect. But more than anything, everyone, it was because of Freaks and Geeks. Let's be honest. One of my favorite shows of all time. What young man didn't have a crush on Kim Kelly? I was certainly among them. So got the chance to talk to Busy in San Francisco on stage. She was lovely and wonderful backstage. Super, super nice, as was her husband, who was there. I'm going to try to get him on. He's a screenwriter and director and producer. But she picked the great film Kicking and Screaming, Noah Baumbach's first movie from back in my college days. And it really hit home for me. It was one of my favorite films back then. It was a pleasure to rewatch and talk about it with Busy. So here we go, everyone. Live from Sketchfest in San Francisco, Busy Phillips on Kicking and Screaming. Hi, everybody. I timed that perfectly, didn't I? It's almost as if I was waiting backstage for this moment. How's everyone doing? Good? Seen any good movies lately? Did anyone want to watch this movie that we're going to talk about?
Yes.
You did your homework?
Yes.
All right, good. So Janet Varney, who runs this show, got in touch with me about another Movie Crush. This is the second one. Was anyone here last year?
Yes.
Yay. Thanks for coming back. Tony Hale, wasn't he great? And Janet gave me a list of people and said, you know, we have these possibilities of who you want here. And I wrote her, she said, send me back your first three. And I wrote her back, number one, Busy Phillips, number two, Busy Phillips, and number three, Busy Phillips. I was like, do you think she'll do it? And she said, yeah, of course she will, I hope. And I was like, well, I guess I could, you know, deal with John Hodgman again if we had to talk about another Avengers movie. But that she was my first choice because she's great, and I love her career and what she's done in the past, what she's doing now, and just have a lot of respect for her as an actor and someone who is making their own way in the business. So I was super, super excited that she agreed to do that. And she's very, very nice. We met about 20 minutes ago, everyone, and she's super cool. So let's just get to it, right? Yeah? Busy?
Yes.
Oh, my God. Busy Phillips, everyone. That's one L and two P's.
One L and two P's.
What's up with that?
Just the way my family spells it.
Okay.
I don't know. You know, I imagine it has something to do with when they came to the country and something got fucked up and they'd spelled it that way.
Where did they where'd they come from?
England? I don't know. My mom's really into like ancestry.com. I've asked multiple times to be on that where do you come from or who do you think you are or what the fuck we take you and find out your ancestor thing.
I think that's what it's called.
Right. And no dice yet. They haven't agreed yet to take me on that journey.
Oh, yeah, yeah, the show where they...
Yeah, I think they only do it if there's something really good and juicy that's going to make you cry.
Right.
But... I don't know. I'll cry at anything.
Sure.
So, so yeah. So I don't know why they spell it that way, but it separates me from all the other Phillips.
Yeah.
Most of the other Phillips.
Sure.
Except the ones I'm related to.
So you've never done the swab? You've never done that yourself?
I didn't do it. And you know what? I got it in like the last time I did, I was a guest on Stephen Colbert.
Uh-huh.
They have, he has like the best gift bag in his dressing room.
Oh, I know.
And they gave, well... This is something, when I was starting my own talk show, this was something that was like, I shit you not, we had all of these meetings about, like, you know, creative team and building the show and what it was going to be and all these things. And I multiple times was like, we need to discuss the gift bag.
Oh, yeah.
For the guests. Like, I need to get that on lock because that's the most, as a person who's done a bunch of talk shows, that's like the most important thing to me. Yeah. But anyway, Stephen Colbert, I just did it a couple months ago and he gave 23andMe in the thing. So I will do it. I don't know. I just got to do it, I guess.
Let's talk about gift bags some more.
I love them. I love free shit so much.
Who doesn't?
I don't know. I have yet to meet someone who doesn't like free stuff.
But what's up with the gift bags? Because I think everyone would love to know behind the scenes, like, what do you get in those things? And what do you give?
Well, okay, so for Busy Tonight, and I've been told now by multiple guests on my show that I have one of the best gift bags that they've gotten. Because what's important to me in a gift bag is, like, not a bunch of bullshit. Like,
right.
I don't want filler. Like, I want stuff that is actually cool, like 23andMe or, you know, whatever. So for my, but it also has to be stuff that, like, basically you get for free from the companies because you don't want to have to pay for it to give it to me. This is what I've learned as a talk show host and producer of my own show. Although I do sometimes buy the Mr. Nightgowns to give to people, which is a thing on my show.
Oh, I
and
know.
They're these dresses. Yeah.
And the gravity blanket, you don't give those away, do you?
I gave that to Andy Samberg.
Okay. I saw
I did
that.
Give my gravity blanket to Andy Samberg.
That's
but
nice.
That was just because he, like, got the flu on it. And and he was like, this really is super cozy. And I was like, dude, just take it. And take that stuffed animal too.
Uh-huh.
And, like, take everything that you've touched.
Yeah, right.
So I give, in my gift bag, it's this really beautiful thing of tea, like called, I can't remember the name of the tea, but it's really nice. I give beauty counter, sunscreen, and makeup.
Okay.
Which is probably going to change to Olay sunscreen. sunscreen's important to me.
It is.
Sun care is important.
Yeah.
We give Mr. Nightgowns. We give those Allbirds shoes.
Sure. I got some of those.
There you go. And what else do we give? Oh, and then we give some Shop Bando stuff because Jen Gotch is a good friend of mine who has Bando.
Mm-hmm.
So we give, like, a tote bag that says I am very busy and a reusable coffee mug and I'm very big on no straws.
Yeah.
So we give away, you know, like reusable straw or, you know, metal straws. And
yeah, I've been doing that too. And my daughter's actually getting into the straw that I carry from the car. She doesn't think it's weird now.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And, like, it's not weird.
No, but to us, to an old guy like me, I have to wrap my head around that. But she's going to grow up in a world
where
you bring your own straw.
You bring your own straw.
What a world.
What a world. Pretty soon we'll stop drinking bottled water, and then it'll be even
That's
better.
Right.
We'll just go back to the way it used to be when people didn't have bottled water.
What does Colbert give?
Well, his is like, he gives like some fancy stuff from Charleston, which
sure.
I love because I spend my summers in Charleston. So there's like some hot sauce. There's some stuff that like is a little bit of a bummer because if you're traveling and you're carrying, you can't take it back with you.
Right. Liquids.
Bummer. Like the, you know, like I don't want to bring like a jar of hot sauce back with me.
Right.
There's like a bottle of liquor. I can't. Oh, maybe I give liquor. Do I give liquor, Mark? Are you there? I don't know. I think I might give some tequila.
We should start a gift bag podcast, I think. Pretty neat. Gift bag daily?
I guess the idea is that the brands. Oh, but you know what's interesting? Oh, because this is true. We get packages sent to us from brands knowing that certain guests are booked on our show.
Mm-hmm.
And like, this is specifically for Julia Roberts, or like, this is specifically for this guest that you are, Sarah Chalk, this guest that they know we're having on.
Right.
So they don't send it to everyone. Also, like the Mr. Nightgowns, because there is like a list. Like, they're like, certain people can have them and certain people they'd rather not.
Wow.
Not like that they don't want those people to have them, but just like for free.
Sure.
I'm serious. It's, you know, but so at Stephen Colbert, my publicist was saying, she's like, oh, you're the first person that I've seen. Like, I got all these, like, this Bran Tucker, like this really beautiful silk robe and this blouse. And my publicist is like, I think they just sent that here and for Colbert because they knew you were going to be on the show. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I think so.
It's all about, I don't know what it's all about.
So where are you from? Where did this all start for you?
I was born in Oak Park, Illinois. And then we moved to Arizona when I was six. Scottsdale, Arizona.
And you spent your teenage years there?
I spent my teenage years there. And then I immediately moved to Los Angeles to go to Loyola Marymount University with Linda Cardellini and Colin Hanks. And then I got Freaks and Geeks my sophomore year. I got the pilot of Freaks and Geeks, and then I dropped out of school. And
good decision.
Yeah. I've never regretted it.
Yeah, I mean, let's talk about Freaks and Geeks, sure. Right, everybody? What a special show. I mean, it's just one of those things that's endured all these years in, like, TV history, I think.
Yeah, everybody makes fun of me on my show because I'm like, well, you know, I was on a seminal teen show.
Yeah.
But it really was a seminal
for sure.
Teen show.
What was, I mean, first of all, were you acting at that point, like in high school and stuff and plays?
Yeah, no, it was always the goal. I was always a performer since the time when I was a baby. And, you know, because you have a
you
kid.
You performed as a baby?
I performed as a baby. I was always putting on shows. Yeah, I was always putting on shows. Uh-huh. I mean, it's interesting when you have kids and you just see like inherent personality things that are so unique, especially like when you have more than one child and you can see the differences mm-hmm. between them and the ones that like naturally sort of like want the spotlight and sparkle right. and shine and put on the shows and you know, as opposed to like the kid that like wants to read books in their room or whatever. Right. I was the one that was like always putting on a fucking show.
Yeah.
And so I got involved in like theater very early and I would do local theater. I begged my parents to get me an agent in Los Angeles and let me fly to LA for auditions because I had a couple of friends who did that in Arizona. Uh-huh. And my mom was like, no, that's not an option. You can graduate from high school and go to 2 years of college. And like she said, she literally said at least 2 years of college. And I did 2 years of college. I did the very least. I mean, maybe she should have gone all the way and been like, get through college. But she didn't. It's fine. So I was looking to become an actor. Mm. And I started doing stuff in high school, like kind of professional gigs when I was a little bit like junior, senior year of high school, like locally in Arizona.
Right. But you had an idea that even from like living in Arizona, that this is a job that you can do.
Yeah. I mean, Chuck, I don't know. I just always thought that anything I wanted, I could have.
Really?
Yeah.
That's great.
Yeah. It's wild.
Yeah.
I don't know why. I mean, I guess I do. My parents, my mom, my mother wanted to be an actor uh-huh. and her dreams were dashed by her parents.
Oh, no.
So, you know, they were always incredibly supportive of my creative outlets and that I could do anything. And, you know, my mom always stuck up for me. She was just like, I write a lot about it in my book, but my mom was just such a fierce protector of my spirit and like wouldn't let it be crushed.
That's awesome.
It was awesome. And because truly, you know, this business wants to crush your spirit.
Yeah.
It's like that is its identifying characteristic. Well, spirit crushing.
Having kids and having daughters especially, first of all, do you think they're interested? And would you, I know you would support anything your daughters want to do because you're a great mom, but knowing the industry, it's so tough. Is it hard to reconcile with that?
I mean, a little bit, but you know, I do think, I mean, first of all, I don't think it's an industry for children.
Right.
And so I wouldn't, I mean, I like Birdie does stuff on my show, mm-hmm. you know, and she did some stuff on Cougar Town. I will, you know, but I wouldn't ever get them an agent or put them up for jobs or any of that stuff. Like, I would Judd Apatow them, but like, I'm not gonna, you know, but I'm not gonna like put them out there to like actually get rejected at this point.
Right. But if you were going to do something and have them on.
Yeah. But I, you know, I do think that getting through high school and 2 years of college is important. No, I don't think
at least two.
I don't think the 2 years of college is important at all. But I do want Birdie and Cricket to both, you know, be able to express themselves in whatever way. And I, the jury's out. I don't know, man. Birdie thinks she might want to go. She's getting older now, and she thinks she may want to audition for LAXA when she gets into high school,
yeah,
or for high school, which is the performing arts school in Los Angeles. And I was like, yeah, I'll help you. I mean, if you need voice lessons or whatever,
right,
they do like local theater stuff.
Yeah.
Their little theater programs.
I wonder if the opposite can happen though, as a performer, if like your children are like, no, I don't want to do what you do at all.
I think
like,
that
would
does
that be hurt feelings?
No, I wouldn't have hurt feelings.
I would.
Really? I don't know. I just feel like, when a Birdie was a baby, I definitely had a thing about like that she was gonna do something other, like that what Mark and I did isn't actually like I had some weird idea that like she should be, you know, like I don't even know what I thought, an intellectual or mm-hmm. like, you know, I don't know, the opposite of me. I just felt like I wasn't supported enough in my education. And
right.
so like, and so I wanted to make sure that she had all of the things that I feel like I didn't have growing mm-hmm. up, educationally speaking.
Yeah.
And now we're giving her all of those things and she's still like, yeah. I'm like way more interested in creative stuff. And we're like, oh, okay. Maybe that's just like inherent to a person.
Yeah.
You know, it's weird.
I'm sure.
Maybe it's
so,
not.
Back to Freaks and Geeks.
Yes.
You've done a lot of work since then. So now that you've had a big thing to compare it to, like you were a kid on that
yeah.
show, like do you look back and realize how special it was? Or at the time, did you think like,
we
it's
knew.
Just a job or
no,
whatever?
No, we knew how special it was at the
yeah.
time. We all sort of agree on that. And the feeling was always that we were doing something so cool and so different and that it was about going to be taken away from us at any second. Like
yeah.
we were very aware. I will say that it was, you know, such an incredible introduction into working in television and film, in that just working for Paul Feig and Judd Apatow,
yeah,
even at that time in their careers.
How old were they then?
Well, you know, to me, they were old men.
Yeah.
And
but what were they, like early 30s?
No, I think they were like late 20s,
oh
early 30s.
Oh, my God.
And I'm not shitting you. Like, if you asked me, I mean, Judd was my dad's age. Like I don't fuck, you know,
no.
In my head, I was 19 when I got that job. And those guys seemed, cause Judd and Leslie had just gotten married. They had,
right.
Maude was a baby. Like they were fucking grown up old people.
Yeah.
And now like, I'm
they
like,
were
wait,
28.
Leslie's like 3 years older than me. Like what? Like how is that even possible?
I know.
Like it's so weird.
Time
when
fucks
you're,
with you so much.
Yeah, it really does in your like late teens, early 20s. Yeah, I think they were in their early 30s when we did that show. But they, you know, already they, I think Paul from coming from the perspective of being an actor
yeah.
and Judd having had his experience on Larry Sanders, you know, they were just so friendly to like the collaboration
uh-huh.
of it all, even with basically children, you know, which
right.
is what we kind of were. And it was so empowering in a way that you don't, most of my friends who started acting as young as I did on different shows
mm-hmm.
didn't have that experience. And like, therefore I think, you know, didn't know to, want more.
Right.
And so it's not surprising to me that literally all of us went on to
it's crazy.
Create
yeah.
and to make our own ways and to do different things because we were just empowered at such an early age.
Yeah.
By people who had been given, you know, the keys a little bit, and they were turning to us and saying, like, but your ideas are just as valid.
Right.
Like,
that's great.
It was crazy. And then to go from that to something like Dawson's Creek, where they're like, literally you are a talking prop.
Right.
Like, you are here to just service what we've written. Mm-hmm. Do not stray from this. Like, you have no say in this.
Yeah.
Look pretty, lose 15 pounds, and man. Like, shut the fuck up.
Yeah.
Was a little bit disheartening.
Who was the casting director on Freaks and Geeks?
Allison Jones.
Okay, because like people never talk about that stuff.
She won like. A thing. She won an award for it.
Yeah, I mean the talent that she assembled for that is just insane.
That's kind of like her vibe now. Like that's what she's known for. Oh, you know,
sure.
Since then is just like finding people. She did sort of an exhaustive search to find that year. She cast the show Roswell, the original Roswell, and so I had auditioned for that show and had gotten fairly far on it, but didn't end up testing for it. And so then she brought me right in for Judd and Paul and Jake Kasdan to read for the role of Lindsay Weir. And then Paul gave me the sides for Kim Kelly, and I...
Kim Kelly.
Took him out in the hallway for 5 minutes and then went back in, and that was it.
It's funny because I worked as a PA years ago in L.A., and I worked on a very small independent film with Jason. And he was, you know, on these sets, all actors are talking about all the things they're going to do. And under the crew, you're like, yeah, whatever, man. And he was talking about, yeah, I'm developing something with Jack Black. And he was unknown. And I remember thinking at the time, yeah, man, we all are. We're all developing something with Jack Black.
Yeah.
And, of course, it's fucking Jason Segel.
Right.
I've felt like a dick ever since then. Just about him.
To be fair, though, like, you are right. You know what I mean? Like...
Right?
Yeah.
Okay. Oh, good. I've been waiting a long time to hear that. Yeah. I'm going to re-meet him one day and remind him about working on that movie.
Yeah.
It'd be kind of cool.
What was it?
It was called The Good Humor Man. Okay. You don't know it.
No, I didn't. But I don't know. Yeah. I could have known it.
Could have been in it.
Yeah, there were lots of like, there were so many independent movies in like the late 90s, early 2000s that people were like hardcore vying for. Like, I remember like auditioning like 47 times for this movie that Dewey Nix was directing and like being like fucking gutted that I didn't get it. Like, I don't even,
what
I don't
movie
remember.
Was that? Do you know?
No, I don't fucking remember. I don't remember at all. Every girl I knew like cried hysterically into her pillow when she didn't get Mona Lisa Smile. You know what I mean? Like, there are so many stories like that.
I bet.
From those years. Oh, Josie and the Pussycats. Do you guys know how fucking bummed I was that I didn't get in Josie and the Pussycats? Do you know how hard I cried?
Soaked your pillow? Yeah. That's tough stuff.
It's
especially
tough
at that age.
Stuff.
I mean, rejection's always hard, no matter what.
Blue
the
Crush.
Age.
I remember I drove to fucking Malibu. I had their casting office was in Malibu. It's rude.
Yeah.
Is what that is. It's fucking rude.
Emily, my wife, loves Blue Crush. That's one of her sort of guilty pleasures.
Yeah. Well.
Or maybe just a pleasure. Emily, is that just a pleasure? No.
Nope. Just guilty pleasure. Yeah.
So Dawson's Creek comes along, and is that where you met your bestie?
It is, actually, yeah. John Kasdan, who's Jake Kasdan's little brother, who had written on Freaks and Geeks and then jumped to Dawson's Creek, was really instrumental in me getting that part on Dawson's. Tom Kapanos was running Dawson's Creek the last 2 years and was a huge Freaks and Geeks fan. Kapanos is, you know, he went on to create that show with David Duchovny. What was it called? Yeah, thanks. Californication.
The movie Crushers.
But his sensibility, that was dope.
Yeah.
His sensibility, I think, was like always like cooler and darker than what Dawson's Creek allowed it to be. Kapanos, I mean.
Sure. Californication.
And so I think like getting me on that show was like the most subversive act he could do at the time.
Right.
Truly. I do think that is true. So John and I were really close friends from Freaks and Geeks. We were really tight, and he was like, "You're kind of, you and Michelle Williams are gonna be best friends." Like he fully said that.
Really?
Yeah, yeah.
That's so funny.
And yeah, it was like, you know, we had a real meet cute, like love at first sight kind of vibe.
It's adorable, and I think
people like it.
It is. It's just, I think. we see you guys on red carpets, yeah, and you're always there and you're holding hands, and yeah, you just sense, not just like, oh, that's so cute, they're besties, but like you really get a sense of the love and support. And like anyone who has that in their life, whether it's a friend or a spouse or whatever, it's just so important. And you guys are so public about it, and it's just, it's heartwarming.
Nice. Thank you.
It's really nice.
Well, I like her a lot. No, but we just definitely have like seen each other through. I mean, like when we met, we just had so much in common, shared sensibility. And I know people like think that it's a little bit unlikely because, you know, I'm such a loud broad and she's like so sensitive and small. But you know, there's like a shared thing in,
yeah,
inside that we have, and then, you know, moving forward, we've just like, you know, been through so much together.
Yeah.
So,
well, and there's something to be said for, especially as a young woman in this industry, like locking arms with someone and mm-hmm, just really having someone to have your back.
Yeah. And like, I don't know, I guess starting out in the industry, like I said, like, you know, like crying over Mona Lisa's smile or fucking whatever. Like I was plagued by like the jealousy and comparison and why not me and why, yeah, didn't I get that and whatever. And like, truly, I think part of the thing that Michelle and my friendship did for me was like allow me to understand and truly see that like we all have these paths, you know, these like as a creative person on this journey, and it's not going to be the same for anyone. And I think I saw that more clearly, not in terms of like me and my comparison to her, mm-hmm, but more like her comparison to Katie Holmes, like when, right, I entered that situation, to see like how it affected those two women very early on.
Yeah.
And like just that it was so clear to me how insane it was, because they're just so such disparate talents and,
right,
like have just such different things going on for themselves.
Yeah.
And that made me see more clearly that like I can never, like, no, I didn't get the part that Rachel McAdams got, like, because I'm not Rachel McAdams, you,
right,
know what I mean? And like,
yeah,
and my journey is going to be something that's totally different and unique. And if I can just remember to hold on to the like core thing of what makes me me, mm-hmm, and stop trying to be something else,
yeah,
that I think people want, then that's like where the true talent is, you know?
Yeah. And I feel, I mean, is that a baby?
Baby?
If it is, just bring that baby right on up here. Baby lovers.
Oh, I'm such a baby lover. I'll try not to cough on the baby, but.
No, yeah, that's so funny. Like two parents were both like, hmm? I have a hard time when I see babies in public now, because I know you can't touch.
You're not supposed to.
But Emily and I both, we want to squeeze.
I know.
And squeeze, and you can't do it.
No, you're not supposed to.
It's frowned upon.
It is.
I've almost asked, like, can I give your baby a squeeze?
Here's where I'm going to give you like a little bit of a trick.
Oh,
as a baby.
I love it.
I'm going to give you a trick. On airplanes, if there's like a mom flying by herself, sometimes you can just like be real cute and offer to hold the baby so that.
Even when you look like me.
Emily can
yeah,
offer,
okay,
to hold the baby.
Because there's a big diff between you sauntering up and
I guess
me
that's true.
Lumbering
I guess that's
down
true.
An aisle.
Want baby. Me to hold your baby?
That's how I would do it, too.
Baby.
Maybe that's the problem.
It's so funny. Mark and I were just talking, because we were sitting at the Embarcadero. We were just like watching all the babies pass. And I was like, God, I would love... This is not well thought out. I was like, I would love another baby for like a couple weeks.
Baby share. Let's start.
Would love a baby share.
Yeah.
You know, you can, if you're like healthy and whatever, you can go do volunteer work at the hospital in the NICU.
Oh, wow.
And like pet babies. I just found that out. Well, you know they need petting, and their parents are so, like, stressed out and stuff, yeah. and they need to sleep. So, like, you can be a little soft. You can, you know, you can cuddle them and hold them and stuff. I might try to do that.
You should.
I know. I have a lot going on, though. That's, yeah. like... this might be, I might be overreaching. I just want someone to bring a baby to me and let uh-huh. me hold it. Oh my God. I was doing this.
You know, this is why I chose you to come on the show, by the way.
Thank you. I'm a spokesperson for Michael's, the craft store. Yeah, that's right. I am their first and only spokesperson ever because it was an outgoing call. I demanded my agent call them and bug them for 2 years. They're like, ma'am, we are a craft store. We do not need a spokesperson.
You're like, oh, I think you do.
And I was like, 100% right. you do, and it's me, Busy Phillips. Anyway, they fell for it. So for the last 3 years, I've been their spokesperson. I was doing a Michael's event in New York, and, you know, it's like people bring their kids, and yeah. we do crafts and, you know, whatever, blah. This woman had a sleeping, like, 2.5-year-old that she was holding, and she was like, can I get a picture with you? And I was like, can I hold your sleeping 2-year-old? And she's like, I would love it. And I had had actually, it was like right when my book was coming out, and I was super stressed because of all this like clickbait press that was happening about this James Franco story that was right. in my book. And it was like really, really bumming me out and upsetting me. Mm-hmm. For a myriad of reasons, you know, one of the main ones being that, like, the irony was not lost on me that, like, I had written a book about how, as a woman in this industry, it's been really difficult for me, and I feel like I've often been reduced, and then, like, I wrote a fucking book about it, and then all the headlines were reduced to being about a man.
Right.
But anyway... So I was like having a really hard time. And so this woman gave me her sleeping 2-year-old baby. And I held that little girl for like 45 minutes while she napped. And a little bit I said to the Michaels people, I'm like, are you guys okay that I'm just doing this? And they're like, yeah, you're fine. You're good. Just hold the baby.
That's so sweet.
Oh, that baby was so cute.
What else happens at a Michaels event?
Mostly just crafts.
So you're doing crafts with people?
I do crafts with people, yeah. I shoot these, like, commercials for them that go on their YouTube channel uh-huh. and, like, get, you know, put in Facebook or whatever. I don't know where they go. I tweet them out. They're called make-offs, the Michaels make-offs, and uh-huh. we get other people. Like, they try to get, like I've done them with, like, Nick Cannon, and Snoop Dogg did one. And
wow.
And we do, like, a crafting competition. Uh-huh. Like, it's sort of making fun of a
You did a craft off with Snoop?
Yeah, I did a craft off with Snoop. His were wild, you guys. I did one with Wiz Khalifa, and on his Instagram, 5 minutes before we got to set, he posted himself smoking out of this thing that was
marijuana?
Like, mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. But it was like a long pipe thing that had like 7 holes, and uh-huh. on in each of the holes was a giant blunt. So it was like 5 minutes before we're going to film the make-off. And he's lighting them all and like sucking it. It looked like a flute. It might have been a flute.
Right. It's like a pan flute.
It was like a little pan flute uh-huh. that he was smoking blunts out of. He got to set, and you can watch the make-off online. It's fine because we were able to edit it. But for the first... I want to say 15 minutes, he did not speak.
Oh, yeah.
It was like a wild.
I PA'd on a Busta Rhymes video way back in the day. The video, Gimme Some Mo. I don't know if you guys remember that one. But there was one part where he was tied to the train tracks. So he was laying down, like tied up in rope. And my job as the PA was to put the blunt in his mouth as he smoked it. And just stand to the side, and he would say, come on, dog. And I would give him some more. And I felt so fucking cool. I was just like, all right, I've made it.
That's amazing.
Yeah, well, and Emily, we told you she used to produce music videos, mm-hmm. and there are some crazy stories from back in the day when like they paid $500,000 to shoot a music video.
I don't feel like that happens anymore.
It doesn't happen anymore.
I did a music video almost 2 years ago for Grizzly Bear. And
awesome.
It, Losing All Sense is the video. I'm sure you can watch it online. I loved it. It was really fun. But like, yeah, I think it was like the budget was like, I don't know, $5,000.
Yeah, it's a different time.
Low pro.
Yeah, she doesn't do that anymore.
No.
For that reason. So, Cougar Town.
Yeah.
Right? I'm curious, like, Courtney Cox is a legend, obviously, from Friends, but what was she like as a boss and like, I mean, that was her show, right?
Yeah.
Like, what was she like behind the scenes as an executive?
Yeah, she's the best, like the best person. I had a really great experience on that show.
Because that's a hard job. To run a show and not a showrunner, but...
Right, she wasn't the showrunner.
But executive produce a show.
And, yeah, and star in it. And yeah. She's in every scene, basically. I mean, she was just very... from what I could see... And then, you know, she ended up basically being like our supervising director. She ended up directing like more than half of the Cougar Towns by the end. Because directing is something that she really loves to do. And mm-hmm. she was getting much more into it toward the end of the run of the series. But she was always like, she's just like a boss ass bitch. Like she just like, she just is. Like she has like all these things. She handles all her stuff. I don't know. Like it was impressive to watch her.
Yeah.
She, you know, she would be watching cuts of the show at lunchtime.
Yeah.
She would be like going to the editing room. She giving note, her producer's notes. But, and then, you know, and then in terms of on set, she was really more just an actor when we were on set. Occasionally she would like have notes that she would talk to the director or the producers about, but.
It's probably hard to draw that line though, you know, and switch that off and go into performance mode.
Yeah. Well, I mean, from the producing standpoint, I mean, when she was directing, and I got to direct an episode as well.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah.
Was that fun?
Yeah, I was really good at it.
Was it nerve-wracking or was it...
Yeah, I was super scared going into it. And I was really only doing it because two of the male actors had done it the year before when I was... I had just had Cricket.
Uh-huh.
And I was just annoyed at the fucking disparity between like the number of male actors that end up directing episodic television and female actors that end up doing it.
So because
in like all my years of being in my 20 years in this business, it was like, it's always like the men actors who end up like parlaying it into a directing career.
Yeah.
Just like at a certain point, like this doesn't fucking work anymore. And this is a podcast. So I just pointed to my face. Like it falls away. Like you do even for men too. Like there's a certain point where you're done.
Right.
And you want to be able, if you want to like continue to work in the industry, you have to like figure out different ways to work. And directing is one of them. Directing television is one of them.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's one thing I really respect about you is it feels like 20 years in, you're an overnight sensation. It's because like
you've
been working your ass off.
Yeah.
And like then you wrote a book and now you have your own show and it's like everything's coming up busy. And it's really cool, I think, 20 years in to be, I mean, because of the industry, you're sort of forced to, but to make the decision, like, I'm going to fucking make my own way.
Yeah. I mean, it's interesting. It's always like a work in progress for me. And I think that, I don't know. I just like to do all of it. Like, I like to entertain in whatever way I can. And so for me, that was like doing the show at Largo, doing Thrilling Adventure Hour at Largo. Like,
love it.
That kept me going for a long time. Mm-hmm. Creatively, it was super fulfilling to be able
cool
to do that.
Too.
Yeah, and to be with those people and play on stage like that. And, you know, and then even, I don't know, like with Instagram and stuff, like I was always looking at the Instagram stories is like, you know, building as like literally building stories mm-hmm. on a daily basis and trying to give narratives and I don't know. And entertain, like, yeah. you know, and be entertaining, not just like, woo, we're on the back of a golf cart. Okay. like I can't with that.
Yeah.
I'll skip right through your shit. You know, so I don't know. Like, I think that, and to a certain extent, like, you know, it's difficult for me because I am of a certain age and I started in this business at a certain time, which was, you know, there weren't, you didn't create your own content.
Yeah.
You just didn't. Mm-hmm. Like, you were an actor for hire.
And you just auditioned.
You auditioned and you got the parts they wanted to fucking give you.
Right.
And the idea that you could like somehow create your own shit just didn't really exist.
Yeah.
And then even when I tried to, it was like a fucking disaster for me with Blades of Glory. So.
Oh, that story.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's in my book, guys.
Yeah.
You can
We're not going to give it all away for free.
Yeah.
By the book.
It.
No, it's just really cool though. It feels like we're at a moment in time now where it's 50 years too late, but things seem like they are finally just starting to swing in the right direction.
I think so.
And
a
I think you're
bit.
One of the leaders.
Oh, that's nice.
You know, out there doing it.
I think I just like, you know, I'm just like a little bit of a girl with a chip on her shoulder.
Right.
You know what I mean? And like I always have been. And so I've always like, that was why I insisted on directing that episode of Cougar Town. Like mm-hmm. I always have sort of seen like, well, what the fuck are the boys doing? And let me do that. And
right.
that's how I got this late night talk show. I literally was like, what the fuck are the boys doing? Mm-hmm. Let me do that.
Yeah.
And
it's such a fun show too.
It's fun. I mean, I, you know, but like, let me do that in my own way and make it the mm-hmm. thing that I want as a woman. I don't know why I just did this with my shoulder. It felt freeing for a second and now I regret it. I'm gonna put that back down. Yeah, thank you. I mean, I, you know, it's not without a lot of like thought and
yeah.
time and energy.
No, you don't stumble into your own talk show.
It's exhausting
yeah.
and super fun and every day is a challenge.
Yeah.
We had the craziest day. I don't even know what day of the week it is today. What is it, Saturday?
Saturday.
So Wednesday.
Yes.
So Wednesday... It was pouring rain in Los Angeles. First of all, on Tuesday, Andy Samberg almost canceled because he was sick. And
I saw that one. That was very sweet for him to show up. You could tell he was hurting.
I thought it was a really cute interview because he was so he was so sick and cozy.
He was like a little puppy.
But he was a little buddy.
Yeah.
But he and I are like friends, really friends mm-hmm. in real life. And he just texted me like, how fucked will you be? And I was like, dude, so fucked if you don't show up.
Yeah.
And so he was like, all right. So he came, you know, he showed up and, but the next day, one of my guests was sick and like, that was it. Wasn't coming.
Mm-hmm.
And so we scrambled to find someone. But you know, you plan these shows, you've got like a week or two in advance
right.
that you know the guests are booked. And so the producers and the writers and everybody's like working on bit ideas and fun activities for you to do and questions to ask and all of these things so that you're pretty fairly prepared when the person mm-hmm. shows up, you know, but then to throw it all out of the window and we had
how much notice?
We had 1 hour.
Wow. Who did yeah. you get in there?
So you guys, please watch the show. It airs. It'll be this coming Thursday. It's Josh Radnor.
Uh-huh.
It's honestly one of my favorite shows. It's wild. Like it is truly off the rails. Mark, where are you? It's good, right? We watched the cut of it yesterday in my hotel room. It's like, it turned out great, but we had like an hour to pull it together. We were all just like laughing and crying and
yeah.
like, okay.
Like, but I don't want to do this every day.
Yeah.
yeah.
It's not ideal.
Yeah.
But it was kind of fun.
That's cool.
Yeah.
Congratulations for
pulling
it out.
Together. We could have scrapped it, truthfully, because we had had all our shows for this week done. But because it's MLK Day on Monday,
right.
We're not supposed, you know, you don't want to film because you have to pay everybody double.
Really?
Yeah.
Insider stuff, everyone.
So this was supposed to. Whatever, it doesn't even matter, but as a producer, these are the things, like the decisions that have to be made. So I was like, if we can pull, there were a few people that my talent booker came and they're like, I think this person can come, and I think this person. I was like, I don't want to just do a show with somebody that's not going to be interesting and we have to pull it together in an hour,
right?
And Radner and I have known each other for a long time, and I knew that
right, he could do it,
he would be great and be down to play, and you yeah. know, and it was really fun.
Yeah. That's cool.
Yeah.
All right. I feel like we should get into our movie now.
Let's talk about the movie.
Kicking and Screaming from 1995, written and directed by a 25-year-old Noah Baumbach.
Yep.
Which is crazy. And it's one of those movies, too, where... All right. I graduated college the year this came out, so it was... Just sort of, I felt like my life, except I wasn't walking around wearing tweed blazers.
And right, right, right.
Talking about, you
Where'd
know,
Where'd you go to college?
Kafka. I went to the University of Georgia in Athens, Georgia.
Yeah, yeah.
And it was great, and we had
Everyone
a lot of
just
fun.
Listened to R.E.M., and like, it was like
yeah,
Michael Stipe
much.
All the time.
And like, yeah, looked around for Michael
Where's
Stipe
Michael?
Anywhere. I did play softball with Mike Mills.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, he was on my softball team.
That's cool.
He doesn't remember that, though. Because I met him years later, a few years ago.
And he was like...
No clue. But we hung out. He was nice.
Yeah, yeah.
But anyway, so I had just graduated college, and this movie comes out about people just graduating college. It's supposed to be set in, I think, upstate New York, but it's like clearly Los Angeles. It's one
right?
of the best sort of worst fake jobs I've ever seen on a movie. It's like palm trees all over the place. It's supposed to be New York.
Where did he go to college? Vassar?
He went to Vassar, yeah.
Yeah.
And it doesn't
I
say
always
Vassar,
assumed
but
it was supposed to be like Vassar.
Yeah,
I always assumed it was like their college.
It's supposed to be, but it was actually Occidental in Eagle Rock.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Yeah, it feels like, but also because of that, like how they kind of mess with the location. I don't know. It sort of feels like it could be anywhere.
Yeah,
do you know
true.
What I mean?
Well, we were trying to figure it out. We were like, is this... suburban Chicago or but then they're talking about New York all the time,
right?
And like moving to Brooklyn, and then I found out about the Vassar connection, so I think it's supposed to be New York.
Yeah, okay.
But it's so low budge, you
I
know
love it.
And has like I saw it back then a bunch of times, and it was one of my favorite movies back in the day.
Yeah,
and to see it all these years later, it's kind of funny to see like it was such like a student film.
I know,
but like in the best ways.
It's so good though.
Yeah,
I like it better than a lot of his other movies.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Interesting, because, I mean, I love his whole, like, I mean, he went on to do Squid and the Whale, obviously, Margot at the Wedding, Greenberg, Frances Ha.
I like Greenberg a lot, and I like Frances Ha a lot. Michelle was supposed to be in Greenberg, by the way.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Who? Oh, was that?
It's Greta.
Oh, okay. And that was the first movie she did with him.
Uh-huh. That's how they met.
Right, because he was married to J.J. Lee.
Who?
Jennifer Jason Leigh.
Oh, yeah. Oh, you call her JJ?
Yeah. JJ Lee?
Yeah. Guys, that's her name, right? JJ Lee? You're like me. You give people nicknames that you don't know. I like it.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's all we do.
JJ. Yeah, I don't love Squid and the Whale as much as a lot of people do.
I think a lot of people do love that movie.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't love it.
You guys love that movie? Yeah. Squid and the Whale?
Yeah.
All right.
I mean...
Four people like it. And then Meyerowitz Stories, did you see that, the Netflix one?
I didn't watch it.
Because Dustin Hoffman?
No, just because, I don't know, man. I don't watch movies anymore.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Well, let's unpack that.
I don't have fucking time.
Oh,
who's got
sure.
time to watch fucking movies?
Yeah, yeah.
Even on Netflix. I mean, I watched The Favorite when I had strep throat and the flu.
I heard that's good.
I loved it.
Yeah, I got to check that out.
And in fact, one of the like main executives at E, we got like I was so fucking salty to her because we did the post Golden Globes show for Busy Tonight, and I was like, can we please get a bunch of bunnies and say they're the bunnies from The Favorite? And we did. We got the bunnies, and she was like, I don't understand this. I hated that movie. And I was like, you're wrong. You are wrong, and you have terrible taste if you hated that movie. Like, I was like so insane about it. I loved it. I thought it was one of like the weirdest, coolest movies I've seen in a long time. Like, in the last 5 years, I feel like I can count on one hand the movies that I've seen.
Really?
Yeah. The Favorite.
Uh-huh.
I saw Black Panther.
Yeah.
In the theater.
And that's it.
Call Me By Your Name.
Oh, yeah.
My favorite. Sobbed for fucking days.
Yeah. Who didn't? You're dead inside.
Dead inside.
Uh-huh.
Is that it? That might be all the movies I've seen in the last 5 years. Like, truly, we just... Oh, my husband's movie I've seen. I saw I Feel Pretty a bunch.
Just that whole red carpet thing.
Well, I saw it so many times. But yeah, it's like, and then also like, I'm very interested in the Netflix situation with movies and mm-hmm. like how that were. I mean, I guess the Bird Box people really were into.
I still haven't seen that. Everyone has seen
I'm
that,
not
right?
gonna watch it, guys. I'm sorry, I'm not gonna watch it. It's still happening.
I have a hard time with children in distress movies now.
Can't do it.
It's tough.
Yeah, I can barely read peoplemag.com.
yeah. You're not joking.
No, I'm not joking.
So how old were you?
I was in high school.
Were you one of those high school kids, though, that saw this and was just like, oh, my God, I want to be them?
It was
so
everything.
Bad.
Yeah, yeah. To me. I just, like, I remember seeing this movie when I was, I was probably 16 years old.
It was 95, so, yeah, kind of middle high school.
Middle high school. My boyfriend and best friend worked at the Harkins Theater, that was like the art house theater mm-hmm. in Arizona in Scottsdale. And so we would like go see all the movies for free.
Yeah.
All the art house movies. Like I sat through the like Kenneth Branagh Hamlet around that time.
Oh yeah.
Anyone else? It was like 5 hours.
Did you say you enjoyed it or you sat through it?
I don't remember. We did Hamlet in my high school later.
Were you in it?
Yeah, I was the queen.
Oh, nice. Of course.
Definitely not Ophelia.
I like that.
So Queen Gertrude. So I remember seeing this movie and just feeling like it was like the smartest, best, funniest shit I had ever seen. And like that was the kind of sensibility that I had, and like what my truest expression of myself, if I could like put myself in any movie or write any movie, it would be that movie.
Yeah.
I like just loved it. And then I just got it on tape. I got it on VHS mm-hmm. and I would just watch it over and over and over again. And then I got Mr. Jealousy, which was his first movie. Like that was a student film? Or was Mr. Jealousy after?
It was right after this, yeah.
I got Mr. Jealousy and I got, maybe it was, this one was, it was called Highball.
Do you know the story? I read up about that.
No, what is it?
So
I had that on VHS too. So I would watch Highball, Mr. Jealousy, and Kicking and Screaming.
Did you like Highball?
I feel like it was like...
Because he's disowned it.
Yeah, I don't know. What is it?
Well, the deal
was it a student film?
No, he shot Mr. Jealousy. Noah Baumbach wrote and directed Mr. Jealousy with
Which
Eric
Stoltz. Which is also fucking great. That movie's really good.
I haven't seen it.
What?
I know.
Oh, you should see it.
That's the only one I haven't seen it.
It stars Eric Stoltz and Annabella Sciorra.
Yeah, who I love.
Right?
Yeah.
Okay. Sorry, I thought you were correcting me like I was wrong. Yeah, and it's really good. And Carlos Jacot, of course.
Right, who is in this as well.
Yeah.
But so, yeah, he makes Mr. Jealousy and then apparently had like a little money and some film left over, does Highball in like 10 days or something.
It's like in an apartment.
And like couldn't finish it the way he wanted to. And so he abandoned the project, took his name off of it. It doesn't say written and directed by Noah Baumbach. He made up two different names for writer and director. And disowned it, and he said that they released it without his permission on, whatever, on DVD or
VHS. I had it on VHS.
Yeah, so I still haven't seen that one because he's just like, nope, not my movie.
It's like a little bit like The Anniversary Party, like not as good as The Anniversary Party.
I love that movie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like that thing. It's like takes place at a party, like all in one night type deal.
Yeah, he had some leftover film.
He had some leftover film. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Oh, I love The Anniversary Party.
Oh, so great. Waiting for someone to pick that one. So
shoot, I wish I would have.
Oh, that's right. We can do this again. The character names just kill me. Grover, Otis, Skippy.
Yeah.
It was like, what was he doing when he was naming these characters? No one's
Miami.
Naming. Oh, that's
and
right.
And Parker Posey plays Miami.
Yeah, who, I mean, I still adore her, but this was that mid-90s period where she was just like the queen.
On fire.
Yeah, it's like every indie movie.
Party Girl. Like,
yes, I did Party Girl. You know Guy Branum?
Yeah.
He was my guest for Party Girl. That was his pick.
Oh, that's a great pick.
Yeah.
Especially that's perfect for him.
I loved it.
I loved Parker Posey. Parker Posey, when I was a young person thinking about being an actor, that was who I looked up to, was Parker Posey. I wanted to be Parker Posey.
Yeah. I love the scene with her and God bless him. That guy's not so great. The guy that played Skippy.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But that scene that they have together where after she had cheated on him with Max and she's just sitting there and she's just like, just this you,
just this,
your face,
all of it,
and your hair.
You. I hate it.
It's so
out.
Parker Posey.
Get out. Get out.
It's so cute.
Out. Out.
And that's actually
so fucking good.
That's his best scene in the movie, probably,
yes,
when he's
for sure
mimicking her and all.
Yes.
And you can tell it seems so genuine. She's starting to kind of crack up.
Yes, I love it.
It is. That's
it's
one of the great
so
scenes.
Good. Yeah. I also love when they're moving her into the dorm fall semester. And he's like, oh, the trusty fan. Everybody brings it. And she's like, I use that fan all the time.
Yeah.
All the time. I don't know why she just cracks me up.
I know. She just always has this self-assuredness that you feel like is her. Like, I've never met her, but she seems like that's who she's like on screen, you know? Do you know her?
No.
Really?
No.
That surprises me.
It surprises me, too. I would have thought by now. But she's a New York bitch, and I'm an L.A. bitch.
Oh, sure.
Yeah. So it's different.
It.
Different coasts.
Yeah. So, I mean, the movie opens up with the Pixie song right out of the bat. So you've got me hooked. And then that party, which is not like any college party you've ever seen.
Like in like a weird mansion.
Yeah. And they're like wearing blazers and drinking champagne and stuff. So it is this weird bizarro college world that I couldn't relate to. But I just thought they were so fucking cool and grown up.
Yeah.
Because I was, I guess, 21 and they, in the movie, they're 22. But they, it's that weird age thing.
But how old were they? Oh, I guess Noah was 25, you said, when he wrote and directed this?
Yeah, I mean, they were
of age. They were the same age, basically.
And he's in it, too. He plays the guy.
Oh, yeah. A couple times. Pig fucker?
Pig fucker, yeah. Would you rather fuck a pig or...
Lose your mother.
Lose your mother. I'd rather fuck a pig.
Pig fucker. Answer the question, Skippy.
They were not well matched.
No, they were
Skippy
not.
Skippy and Miami.
They were not well matched.
No. Although I feel like she really did him wrong by sleeping with Max.
Yeah, it was a weird call.
The great Chris Eigenman, who...
Chris Eigenman's so good.
Yeah, I mean, this was, I think, right after Metropolitan, maybe, and before Barcelona.
Yes, it was definitely before Barcelona, I think.
But
right?
He's sort of the same guy in all these movies.
Right.
He's just so smug, but somehow likable somehow. I don't know.
Yeah, he's got that thing, that dick thing that you're like into it.
Yeah, for sure. But of course, he ends up with, what's her name, Cara Buono?
Yeah, Cara Buono.
I think
who ended
right.
up on Mad Men.
Yeah, I mean, she did a lot over
the
years. And I was talking to Emily this morning. It's funny because Olivia Dabo, I thought, was just going to be this huge star.
She's so good in this movie.
She is so good. And she's so charming and, like, lovable.
I love that thing with the retainer.
I love
it. She's always taking her retainer out. And I wondered whose choice that was.
Yeah, I wondered that, too. Or if, like, did they build it? They didn't have the money to build her retainer. Was that real?
Maybe it must have been real, right?
It might have been. Like, I don't see a low budget indie being like, let's build her a retainer so she can take it in and out.
No, no, no. I'm sure they didn't. Yeah, but like, I don't know. Maybe that was her idea. I don't know. It's a great
idea. It's very cute.
Idea.
And I read a review from back then that hated that. That said she was always doing this annoying thing with her retainer. And I was like, it wasn't annoying.
Sometimes people are idiots.
Yeah.
They miss what's truly great about something.
Well, I feel like.
And it makes it like so grounded in reality. Like everybody knows that girl, like, you know, that girl.
Yeah, yeah.
Did you ever do like writing intensive classes? Where did you ever, you know, like where you sit around and you read your writing and then other people critique it?
I was an English major. It's the worst.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. So, yeah. So
it's awful.
There was also that. Yeah. I loved those scenes.
Yeah.
He was like writing, like reading his like pretentious stories.
Yeah. And she sort of
she like
digs at him.
Yeah.
Well, those to me, like, are my favorite parts of the movie are the flashbacks. That's sort of the through line of their relationship, because it opens with her leaving him to go to Prague. Mm-hmm. And then they tell the story in flashback of how they met. And those are really sort of the sweetest parts of the movie, I think.
Yeah, I agree for sure. I just also think there are so many. It just speaks to like what an incredible writer Noah Baumbach is. Mm-hmm. There are so many lines in Kicking and Screaming that jump out and are so memorable and repeatable.
Oh, I've been to Prague.
Well, I mean, I haven't been to Prague, but I know that thing. That's
one of the best lines. You've been to Prague? Oh, I've been to Prague.
Well, I've been to Prague.
But it also sort of felt like I used to try and write scripts and stuff, and I still do for fun, and it had that student filmy thing of like he took every funny line he ever wrote on his legal pad and like stuffed it in his first movie.
Right. Most of Carlos Jacot's character is just those like funny lines.
Yeah, he's great.
He's so good. I've worked with him a bit over the years.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I really like him a lot. He sells like a pilot every year as a writer, I feel like.
Writes and sells
pilots? I think he likes I feel like he has pilots a lot. Mm-hmm. So
he's Otis in the movie, by the way.
And he and Noah went to college together. We're good friends.
Oh, okay. I didn't know that.
Let me tell you a story, Chuck.
Let's hear it.
So I think this is in my book. I don't think it got cut. So this was my favorite movie. I was fully obsessed with these bros. And when my first pilot season, when I had my agent, the year that I got Freaks and Geeks, this actually is like part of how I got Freaks and Geeks. I got an audition sheet from my agents, and it was for a pilot called The Acting Class that Imagine Entertainment was producing, and NBC was supposed to be doing. And the writers were Carlos Jacot and Noah Baumbach.
Wow.
And the director was Noah Baumbach. And I like flipped out. Like this, I was, you know, 19 years old.
So where was he in his career? Was it right after this?
Yeah. So this would have been 1990. He had done Mr. Jealousy.
Okay.
This was 1998, the pilot season of 1998. Yeah. So I went in for it was my first year. So I went in for the casting associate. She brought me back for the casting director. The casting director was like, I would love to bring you back for the director and producers, which is like means Noah Baumbach. So they brought me back in. I did my scene for them. I was really funny. and it was Noah and Carlos in the room. It was like so thrilling. And as I was leaving, I like stopped the door and I was like, I just have to say, I don't know if this is the thing that you're supposed to do in auditions, because I've never done this before, but Kicking and Screaming is my favorite movie of all time. I can't fucking believe I'm in this room. Aww. This is so exciting to me. And just like, thank you. And I'm so happy to meet you, and thank you, and goodbye. Uh-huh. I was like, okay, great. So then I get a call and they're like, my agent or my manager was like, so it's a little weird. NBC hasn't fully committed to making this pilot. They were like, Imagine was kind of like going through the casting process to see if they could like get someone attached that would push them into making the pilot. But instead, what they're wondering if you'll be willing to do is do a table read as this character. Like, they love you. You're their first choice. If you'll do a table read of this pilot at NBC to try to convince NBC to like fully commit to making the pilot. So I was like, fuck yeah.
Yeah.
So we go, I go, and it's me, an unknown Adam Scott.
Oh my God.
An unknown Nia Vardalos.
Wow.
Playing one of our acting teachers, Carlos Jacot, Jim Lear, mm-hmm. who's also Lear? What's his name, Mark? John Lear. John Lear, my other half of my brain, is my husband, Mark Silverstein. John Lear, who's also in this movie, you know, with the long hair. He's like,
oh.
Was he like one of the cavemen? Yeah. He started that, right? They're like cavemen that sold insurance or whatever, and then they got a TV show.
Right. That weird thing that happened.
That was a thing that happened,
yeah.
guys.
Yeah,
anyway, John Lear, Carlos Jacot, Nia Vardalos, Adam Scott, me, and there was somebody else, but I can't remember who. But anyway, we do this fucking table read, and it was so exciting. Like, Noah worked with us for a couple hours. It was like being directed by Noah Baumbach.
That's so cool.
It was so cool. We did the table read for all the NBC executives. Brian Grazer came because it was Imagine.
Wow.
Which was really exciting. It was all so exciting. We left NBC. I remember walking to the parking lot with Adam Scott, the sun. I remember this moment so fucking clearly. I also kind of have a photographic memory, but the sun was setting and I was like, I lit a cigarette because I smoked then. You know, I was 19. And gave him one. And I was like, this is so exciting. We're going to like do this fucking pilot. And he's like, oh, this isn't getting made. Like Adam was like already, he had done nothing and was like already
cynical.
So cynical and jaded. He's like, oh, this isn't getting made. And I was like, it's
Listen,
not.
Kid.
No, I was like, it's not. And he's like, yeah, no, there's no way they're making this pilot. And I was like, oh, okay. Well, it was really nice to meet you. He's like, yeah, best of luck to you. I hope you get something this year. I was like, okay. Got in my Honda Civic Si, drove back to Loyola Marymount. And sure enough, by the time I got back, there was a message on my my dorm phone that the terrible news, they were not going to go forward with making the show. But the Grace Wu, who was the head of casting at NBC, wanted me to come in like the next or in that week to have a general meeting. And that general meeting, she gave me the script for Freaks and Geeks and was like, wow. I'm going to make sure they see you for this. You'd be perfect for it. Yeah.
Crazy. And whatever happened to Adam Scott, right?
Yeah, I know.
Old man Scott.
So funny. He's like been that way since we were children.
Really?
Like, yeah. Yeah, it's so funny. It's so funny. That pilot was great. And I've tried to find it. And I've asked Noah if he...
So you guys are pals?
Well, we know each other now. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I asked him if he has it. And he's like, I don't know where that is. I mean, I could try to find it, but his side of the story is so crazy, which was just that like Steve Martin and was also an executive producer on the pilot.
Wow.
Like Steve Martin and Brian Grazer and Noah they wanted Noah and Carlos to write a show. It basically seemed like totally arbitrary. Like they were just like, just write about like college kids. Isn't that something that people like?
Right.
And they just wrote about this acting class in New York.
Good story.
I know. I'm sad that it didn't go, and I wish I could find the pilot.
How cool, though, that like you got to meet and now know one of your like favorite directors
I know.
And writers.
It's crazy.
Is it the kind of thing, like, how does that work? Can you say, like, hey, dude, why didn't you put me in a fucking movie yet? Can you do that? Is that how it works?
No, I don't think so. No. Because I have so many of those friends where I'm like,
right.
Sometimes Mark and I talk. That's the conversation. Like, you know, like, do you have like things you can only tweet in your head or like things you can only like text to your partner? Like, I have those conversations with Mark. Like, those are the conversations. Like, why the fuck did so-and-so not put me in that movie, Mark? And he's like, I don't know, babe. I don't know. I really don't know.
Oh, that's funny. What struck me too watching this last night was Olivia Dabo's character. I was kind of watching her and thinking, oh my God, that's kind of Greta Gerwig.
It is. Yeah.
Like,
is that like his version of like the manic pixie dream girl or something?
I guess so.
Like super hyper intelligent, like
yeah,
very anxious.
Very literate and anxious.
Literate.
Uh huh.
girl with blonde hair.
Yeah, maybe so. But it really like kind of hit me last night. I was like, that's sort of how she is, it seems like.
It's interesting to me, too, that like sort of that thing that Frances Ha and this movie have in common, that sort of, you know, like aimless, like not knowing what the future is bringing or where you're supposed to be going thing is the thing that I like relate to so deeply in both of his films. Like I really, it's what I like most, is like people trying to figure it out and failing.
Yeah. I mean, and that's what this whole movie is sort of about, the great unknown and that moment when you're graduating college and or 2 years into college and you're like, what's out there for me? And there's that, it's sort of exciting, but it's also scary as hell.
But I feel like
looking
you
back,
though,
you're a kid.
Yeah. You're like, like actual children.
Yeah. Like literally babies, crying babies.
But you think that you're so grown up.
I know. And they did in this movie. They're all playing grown up.
I know. It's so funny. And Eric Stoltz is supposed to be like the old man.
He's 28.
And he's 28.
Well, and at one point, Cara Buono's character calls Josh Hamilton Old Man River, and he's 22.
old are you? And he's like 22, and she's like, Old Man River.
Right. And then who's the actress from Entourage?
Oh my God, Perry.
Yes.
Gilpin? No.
Emily who?
No, Perry Reeves.
Perry Reeves, right. She's in this as
a
like
freshman,
the freshman.
That Grover sleeps with trying to get over Jane.
Right.
And she takes her top off and like has like a really awkward trying to be sexy moment.
Yeah, yeah. And Marissa Ribisi's in it.
Yeah, Marissa Ribisi is in it.
She's credited. She's
roommate.
Uh-huh.
Is she the roommate?
Yeah, like he goes to sleep with another freshman girl in the dorm. And it's like they're on the little twin bed next to the other people that are having sex in the other twin bed.
Did that happen in college? That wouldn't definitely did not happen at my college.
Not to me.
People having sex. Oh my God, these people are nodding.
Nodding yes.
You had sex like with your roommate in the room? Ew.
I wasn't having sex at all.
All right.
So,
fair enough.
I'm not the guy to ask.
I see the baby in the back, by the way.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I saw that baby head. Back there in a little baby Bjorn.
So yeah, they're all playing adult. The great unknown is in front of them. She's going to Prague and it's really sad, but you get this great love story sort of happening along the way and it ends with that great.
Oh, you really gotta let me, the best monologue of all time.
Say it.
You gotta let me go to Prague. Let me go to Prague.
Yeah. And he knows and he follows her out and says, you know, if I kissed you,
oh, and yeah, yeah.
Yeah, like the very end, if we had been dating, you'd be delighted probably. And he's like, I just want us to be an old couple so I can do that. And it's just like such a sweet line.
It's so sweet.
I get a little choked up when I think about it.
I know, it's really sweet. Just let me, I just wish we could do that. Ugh.
And it was just such a great ending. And like, to look back now at Noah Baumbach's career, it was like the seed. And I love going back and seeing the early work of like some of my favorite writers and directors and actors. Because you can see that seed there. You know, it was a little amateurish and a little student filmy, but just so endearing. But you see, like, the talent that was there, like, you know, ready to go.
But that's why I feel like it's always remained one of my favorites. It's like, just because it is sort of rough around the edges. And then you also, like, have, I guess, in the grand scheme of things, you get to see all the films that came after. Mm-hmm. And you know, like, where it goes.
Yeah.
So it really does feel like the beginning of kind of an amazing journey and career.
For sure. He was 25.
25.
I tried to get the budget for this. I couldn't find it, but it couldn't have been much, you know?
I wonder.
It was in that great time, though, and I talk exhaustively about it on the show, about that sort of early to mid-90s indie film explosion that happened. It was just so exciting.
Sleep With Me.
Yeah.
I bet you like that movie.
I love that movie.
Yeah. What were some other ones?
Well, Metropolitan and Barcelona, of course. Right. All those really talky. What are some more, everyone? So sort of those. Oh, well, geez.
Right.
I love all those movies. Dudes, I saw Before Sunrise. the night before I took my big European trip.
Oh, God.
And I was like, oh, man, here we go. Julie Delpies are just going to be...
How many Julie Delpies did you find on that trip?
I literally did not kiss a human being on that trip. Not even a little makeout sesh. Nothing. Zero Julie Delpies.
Negative Julie Delpies. Julie Delpies, in fact.
That's how many.
Once Julie Delpy and I tried on clothes next to each other at a store, and it was very exciting for me.
Really?
Yeah.
That would have been exciting for me, too,
It was exciting. It was exciting. I remember it very clearly. It was years ago.
It's funny. Like, the only other thing I have on here that I see is baggy clothes.
In the from the thing?
Yeah.
From the movie?
It's just funny to look back at the 90s and like everything was so baggy.
It's all coming back, dude.
Really?
Yes.
Those huge pants with pleats and stuff.
I don't know. I think it's all about to happen.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah. I saw a Friends episode the other night with Chandler had these big baggy pleated pants with a t-shirt tucked in and like kind of pulled out though over the belt.
Yeah. A little poof.
That was my move. It's just so funny to see that, like, wow, that was awful. Because you always think in the moment that you're in, it's like, no, this is like...
This is how people dress.
Yeah, this will not look stupid in 20 years.
Yeah, I guess you do think that. I don't know.
But it's jeans and a t-shirt. This is not going to look stupid in 20 years, is it?
It's going to look bad.
Really?
Yeah.
There are no stripes in the future.
No. Just like, it's just going to be off, like the fit. Or whatever.
Right.
Like people will, you'll look back and you'll be like, what was I doing wearing it that way?
Yeah, but dude, I'm going to be fucking 68 years old in 20 years.
Oh my God.
I know. It's sad, isn't it?
It's weird. Getting older is weird.
It is very weird.
I don't know. I vacillate. Sometimes I'm like, it's amazing. And sometimes I'm like, this blows.
Yeah. I did that thing. I'm obsessed with checking ages of... and I've talked about this on the show of characters and like how old they were when they played them. Like I'll see something and I'll be like, Paul Newman was younger than me when he played Butch Cassidy.
That's like, aside from like all the political trash fire on Twitter, like, those are the ones that bum me out the deepest where they're like, Bruce Springsteen was 29 in this photo. And you're like, what?
Nobody wants to hear that.
No!
Shit. Just stop.
Please.
Stop it all.
Please stop. I know it's crazy for me too. Like, cause I feel like even in thinking about like what you were saying right at the beginning, like when I did Freaks and Geeks, like Judd seemed so old and he was like 32 years old or something like that. And
he was an infant.
He was, much younger than I am now. Oh, yeah, it's crazy.
All right, so we've got 12 minutes left. We finished with 5 questions.
Oh, okay, what's that?
I didn't tell you about this.
Oh. Well, to be fair, you didn't really tell me about anything.
No, that's right. It's so Chuck. Number one, what's the first movie you saw in a movie theater?
Karate Kid, one of the Karate Kid movies. I don't know which one, but it was early 80s, and this is like weirdly sort of a tragic story for me, which is that... My parents got my sister, they got 2 tickets to the Jackson 5 Victory Tour.
Oh, man.
And so they were taking my mom was taking my older sister, and they like only could afford, like only got 2 tickets.
Yeah.
And so the consolation prize that they tried to make seem as cool was that my dad was taking me to see the Karate Kid, but even at like age 4 or whatever I was, I like knew that it was bullshit.
Oh, so sad.
But also, you know, all right.
Sure. Does anyone else have that thing too where they're flipping through the cable guide and they see Karate Kid and you're like, oh, fuck yes. And you turn it on and it's Will Smith's son. And you just go, oh, God. Hoodwinked. First R-rated movie you saw, period.
Okay. Well, I actually don't know if this is the first, but I do know that I snuck into The Hard Way with Michael J. Fox and horrible one, James Woods, and it was rated R.
Mm-hmm.
And my best friend Emily Beebe and I snuck in to see it, and I loved it so much that then I saw that movie like four times in the theater.
The hard way.
I loved it.
That's where he's a actor playing a cop.
He's an actor doing like a ride along, and James Woods is the real cop.
Right.
And I don't know why. I just fucking loved that movie.
Right.
And I also loved, was the one, oh my God, about the FX, about the special effects.
Oh, yeah, yeah, with the Australian.
Yeah, with the Australian actor.
Uh-huh, yeah.
Was that one rated R too?
Probably.
Yeah, I loved that movie too when I was a little kid. I saw so many movies growing up.
Yeah.
Tons.
And were your parents permissive with the ratings, or was it?
Yeah,
like,
my parents never cared about that.
Lucky.
I remember having a really uncomfortable moment watching, I think it was Outrageous Fortune with my grandma.
Bette Midler?
Yeah. Is Outrageous Fortune the one where there's like an extended fucking scene in the beginning? Like, it's comical. Where she's just like.
Oh, right. Comical fucking.
It's comical fucking. Uh-huh. We're just like legs flying and stuff. But like as a 7-year-old, it's like really traumatic.
Oh, we've all had those moments. It's pretty bad.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. So I don't think there wasn't, and we would like go to Blockbuster every, you know, that we had that routine in my house. Like we would go to Blockbuster every Friday and get our movies for the weekend, and you know. We rented tons of movies.
Yeah, same.
We owned a lot of movies.
The hard way. And what a great guy James Woods turned out to be.
I know.
That was sarcasm.
Terrible person.
We won't get political. Number three, I usually try to tailor to the person. So maybe in your career span, like not any movie ever, but like what movie do you wish you could have been in? Like more than any other.
In 20 years that I was.
Yeah, yeah. Or if you want, you can open up to any movie in history, right? There are no rules.
Well, that seems like, what? I guess Kicking and Screaming would be my answer.
Oh, yeah? Would you want to, Miami? You would have been a great Miami, actually.
I would have been a great Miami.
Yeah.
In fact, the part that I essentially had gotten in that NBC pilot was Miami.
Right.
Like, it was that girl.
Yeah.
I had a great line that I still remember, which was, all right, losers, I got to go. I have a yeast infection that could flip a cow.
I could hear Parker Posey. You guys, there's a similar thing going on there.
I love her.
You're like the blonde, you're the L.A. version.
That's what I told you.
Yeah.
I'm an L.A. bitch.
Yeah. Will you leave a bad movie? Will you walk out of a movie?
But by the way, though, I would have rather been the Olivia Diabo's part.
Oh, okay. Interesting.
You didn't expect that.
Did not expect
that. I know.
Yeah.
I'm unexpected. I would have liked to have played that part.
What line? What's your line for her? Like, what's your favorite line from her? One thing I love is how she keeps coming back and saying, I thought of a great retort to what you said yesterday, and I would just like to say that right now.
Yeah, I thought of a great retort when you said. I always liked, you're not a fair weather friend, Grover. You're a foul weather friend. You're only happy when people are suffering like you.
Yeah, that's a tough line for a 21-year-old.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a good one. Will you leave a bad movie, number four? Do you walk out? I know you don't go to movies anymore, but...
I have not. I don't leave bad movies.
You'll stick it out.
I suffer through it. I even saw a movie. I just remembered one of the movies that I saw in the last 5 years, and it was so fucking terrible, and I was with a friend of mine, and we were just like going for a laugh and like... Let's get high and see this. How bad could it be?
Right.
And I remember being in the theater being like, this isn't even fun stoned. Like, this is just terrible. But I couldn't bring myself to leave it.
Do you want to say what movie that is?
I think it's Mean.
Okay. That's fine. You'll tell me about it.
Also, I have a talk show now. So, like, I want those people to be guests on my show.
Got a lot to think about now.
Yeah.
And then finally, movie going 101. When you do go to movies, what's your deal? Where do you sit? What do you eat? Do you have rituals?
Well, oh, we take the girls to movies, actually.
Oh, that's fun. Sure.
Yeah. So I've seen, like, so I saw Paddington 3? No. I saw Paddington 2, and I saw Peter Rabbit, which was totally nonsensical, but everybody yeah. loved it. I mean, the little people loved it.
Right.
Saw that one movie that I, like, legit straight up fell asleep in. We get popcorn. I like Coke, regular, mm-hmm. not diet. I enjoy a gummy candy.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Like, okay. like a Sour Patch Kid.
Mm-hmm.
I love dots.
What are dots?
Dots are like those little mounds of gummy.
Oh, I don't know those.
They sell them in movie theaters. Little mounds. No?
Don't know the dots.
We always only now at this point go to the Arclight. Mm. In Los Angeles, where you like get your seat picked out for you. So it's
the only way to go.
It's the only way to go.
Yeah.
I like to sit like midway up,
mm-hmm.
middle.
Yeah.
I'm a middle seater.
Yeah. I mean, most people are, but we have had some weirdos on the show that like John Ronson, the author, sits, I think, front row, far left.
Ugh.
Or something weird. Because he's from Wales. He's like, I know no one's going to be there. I was like, well, of course not. It's because it's the worst seat in the theater.
That's so weird.
Yeah, it's like, you know.
That feels like something that would be on his, like, you know, signs that you're a psychopath.
Right. On a psychopath test?
Yeah, on the psychopath test. Like, yeah. That person sits there, psychopath. That's crazy.
It is crazy. It's very weird.
I like John Ronson.
No, he's great.
He's really nice to me.
He's a lovely, lovely human.
Yeah.
Great guy. We have a few more minutes. Three. So does anyone have any questions? You can shout it out. You don't need to go to a microphone or anything. But if anyone has any questions for Busy, I'm sure she would love to answer.
I can't wait.
Anyone at all? Someone's got a question. Nope. Okay, there we go. So that was dream guest for Busy Tonight.
Yeah, well, and I already had Julia Roberts, like you said, and I'm not allowed to pick Oprah, so she said other than Oprah, because everybody knows Oprah is my number one.
Sure.
I don't know. That's interesting. Like, I really want to have some, like, musical guests on. We just don't have the money for it. And I want to try to figure out an interesting way to have music on. So I would say, I love, like, Phoebe Bridgers, the singer Phoebe Bridgers. Yeah, you would like that too. And I don't know. I need to, you know, it's hard for me because I feel like I know so many people, and like, so that's why like the Oprah thing is like totally aspirational, because I've never met her, or, you know, I'd be very curious to sit with her. Like, you know, Patti LaBelle to me was like a total surprise. I mean, obviously she's a legend, and I guess like I would want someone else like that, like a legend, like Barbara Streisand would be incredible. Somebody who it would just be fascinating to sit with and chat for 20 minutes.
Babs, she'd be great.
Babs would be great. Patti LaBelle was amazing. She gave me her home phone number after. She like loved me.
Wow.
She really loved me. Like, I feel like she could be my grandma. I'm not kidding.
Oh, that's sweet.
I know. And she really, I'm going to go to Palm Springs for her show next month, and she really wants me to drive her to the show.
Really?
Yeah. It was not a bit. Like, she really.
Wow, that's
she
great.
She really, really wants me to drive her to the show.
That's so cool.
I mean, I'm for sure going to film it.
Uh-huh.
But yeah.
Anyone else? We may be out of time, but we may have time for one more. Anyone? Oh, good one.
Oh, wow. Well, it used to be like, I loved Singles back in the day, and I loved the Romeo and Juliet soundtrack, of course.
Mm-hmm. Boy, Singles. What a movie.
Oh, Singles, so good. Has anyone done that?
No, not yet.
Really?
I could talk my head off about that one. That's a good one.
I love singles. Mm. This was hard to, like, when I got the email, like, just pick your favorite movie. I was like, ah, I don't know.
It's not fair. It's not a fair question.
It isn't.
Yeah.
These are so many great fucking movies.
Yeah.
But I do need to commit to seeing more movies. Maybe I will. We just, it's too hard. I don't know how to do it anymore. Also, going to the movie theaters kind of stress me out now because I'm a very anxious person.
Right. You get bothered too, I imagine.
Not in LA. No one gives a fuck. They all think they're famous.
Oh, okay.
But no, but it's more like I have mass shooting fears.
Right.
Yeah, like I'm like a like I
yeah, yeah, yeah.
I get like very uncomfortable in malls and
gotcha.
Whatever, dude, it's the time we're living in. No one's making any changes, so I guess I just won't see movies. Yeah.
Well, I think that's the perfect way to end, everyone.
Sorry.
Give it up for Busy Phillips.
Ah!
Thanks a lot. It was great. And thanks for coming, everybody.
Thanks, guys.
It was wonderful. All right, everyone. I hope you enjoyed that. Those live shows are always fun. I had a good time talking with Busy and getting to know her a little bit, and it was a great pleasure. Many thanks to her for coming on. Follow her Instagram and her Twitter. Just look up at Busy Phillips. That's one L and two P's, interestingly. And if you haven't seen Freaks and Geeks at this point, everyone, just go watch that. It's 18 episodes, I think. And it's just some of the best TV ever made, as well as her work on Cougar Town. Check out her new talk show, Busy Tonight, on the E! Network. And get her book. She wrote a memoir that's gotten great reviews for her bravery and her honesty in talking about her life and career. It's called This Will Only Hurt a Little. And I'm going to read it too, actually. It sounds great. So big thanks to Busy and big thanks to you for listening. And until next time, why don't you come out next year and see me live in San Francisco? Because it'll be happening all over again. Movie Crush is produced, engineered, edited, and soundtracked by Noel Brown and Ramsey Yunt at HowStuffWorks Studios, Ponce City Market, Atlanta, Georgia.